The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast and subscribe. Well, we've got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking to an expert on an area that we have talked about on and off in different conversations, but really have never really focused in on it in any of our podcasts. So I'm real excited about it. The expert that we have here today with us is Yona Weiss, and Yona is a powerhouse when it comes to property owners' tax savings. As business director at Madison Specs, a national cost segregation leader, he has assisted clients in saving tens of millions of dollars on taxes through cost segregation. He has a background in teaching and a passion for real estate and helping others. Well, Yona, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Thank you very much, Bill. It's a pleasure to be on with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a honor for us. I mean, this is a great topic area, and one that definitely has some interest for our listeners. But before we get started and kind of jump into that, I just thought maybe you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in real estate.
Sure. I first got involved in real estate about 5 years ago. Well, even before that, my parents owned a number of out-of-state rental properties, and that kind of fascinated me. But I was a teacher for about 15 years and never really did any real estate investing, was never really interested, just for lack of any other reason. I was, busy and raising a family of six children, thank God. And I, about 5 years ago, after we had our sixth, he thought I needed to branch out and find some way of bringing in some extra income. And that's when I kind of stumbled upon real estate through a bunch of friends and decided, hey, this is a great industry. I think I can, there's a lot of potential. And I ended up getting my broker's license, and I'm working in commercial mortgages for a little while just to learn the commercial industry, and just started soaking up everything and wanted to learn everything there was to know about, real estate. So I, with a partner, did a few fix and flips, and then decided that was definitely not for me. And it was much more, I was much more interested in the commercial side of things and interested in multifamily and started learning a lot more until I, you know, got my job recently about 3 years ago at this company, Madison Commercial Real Estate, which currently, you know, working in the cost segregation division, which gives me a big foot involved in the commercial real estate industry, you know, as an expert, someone who is dealing on a day-to-day basis with, you know, property owners, investors, and really learning directly from them about what they're going through, their struggles, and trying to help them overcome some of those challenges. And doing that, like I said, for the past 3 years or so, I've been inspired to start investing myself and, you know, currently working on a couple of multifamily deals with some partners who had more experience than myself. And hopefully that's going to open a new chapter in this journey.
Wow, that's great. That's great. Well, it is one of those areas where, you know, you hear it a lot and everybody says you definitely have to do it. But I just don't know that many people that really can define it that well. And it's great that you're a teacher because you've got a willing student here, on at least on this end of the mic here. And I'm sure there's plenty of others listening that would really love a clear explanation of exactly what cost segregation is and what it does.
100%. I think there's a lot of misconceptions, and it's just kind of a strange concept, especially for people who have been involved in real estate but have not ventured into commercial real estate or multifamily and have just not been involved in that. It's not something that's relevant. And as we'll get to shortly, we'll see how cost segregation can be so much more beneficial, you know, the bigger the property is. And you know, therefore single families or people who are involved in smaller properties may not even know about it, because it's just not relevant for them. So cost segregation, just the stigma of the name itself throws people off, right? Like, what in the world? Why do the IRS give such a strange name, such a cool tax benefit? And it could be because they're just trying to deter people from doing it. But, you know, in all seriousness, you know, means component depreciation. So let's take a step back. Cost segregation is a way of accelerating depreciation, but let's describe what depreciation is first so we can further understand how the cost segregation in this accelerated form of depreciation works. So depreciation is a tax deduction. It's a tax write-off that every property owner, you know, excluding your, you know, personal residence, any property owner gets this tax write-off, okay? It sounds like it's a bad thing, right? Depreciation, it's something going down in value, right? But really, it's a very positive thing. It's just a concept that since conceptually property goes down in value as time goes on, when you buy a property, even if it's an old property, you get what's called a depreciation tax write-off. Okay, that means you're allowed to write off the entire value of the building, of the purchase price, minus a small amount for land value, which land does not depreciate. But so you're allowed to write off that entire value over the course of 27 and a half years, if it's a residential property or multifamily, or 39 years if it's a commercial, any other type of commercial property. So essentially, you get this huge tax write-off, but it's a little bit every year. You know, albeit you get this huge tax write-off based on the fact that you bought a new property. And the reason I say it's kind of hypothetical and kind of just conceptually based on the concept that things go down in value, because this starts over for the buyer when you buy a new property. So let's say I buy a property today for $1 million. I'm allowed to write off that entire $1 million over 27 and a half years, about $30,000 of tax write-off, a tax deduction from my income tax every single year. If I sell it to you 5 years from now for $5 million, you start that schedule, you start that process over as if it's brand new. So you get to write off $5 million from your income tax, you know, starting over from day one when the day that you purchased the property. So this is one of the biggest tax benefits that is out there, this tax deduction from your income tax called depreciation. But it gets even better because the IRS says there are certain things in a property that actually depreciate on a much faster schedule, meaning you can take much more tax deductions on those assets at a faster rate. So for example, personal property or things that are in the building not connected to the structure depreciate on a 5-year schedule, which means sometimes 20, 30% or even more of the property you just bought, you can write off over a 5-year schedule instead of a 27-year schedule. So instead of $30,000 a year, for example, if you take 20% of that $1 million, $200,000, and write that over 5 years, that's approximately $40,000 extra every single year. So instead of a $30,000 deduction every year for 5 years, you're looking at a $70,000 deduction. And so this is the basic concept of how cost segregation works.
Wow, that's great. Now, maybe you can sort of give an example of what kinds of other things, outside of the land and building itself, would be included in let's say cost segregation accounting for depreciation.
So, like I said, there are mainly three categories when we're looking at a property. You're looking at the building or the structural components, which, the walls, the roof, the foundation, and even certain structural electric, plumbing systems, those all depreciate on the longest schedule, right? They last the longest time. So that's the 27.5 year for residential and 39 year. The two other main categories are one called land improvements, which depreciate on a 15 year schedule, and personal property or tangible property, which depreciate on a 5-year schedule. So some examples of those personal property items might be furniture, fixtures, appliances. If you have a multifamily property, for example, you'll have carpeting, cabinetry, countertops, all those things, they're not part of the structure. They have a very, big value, a large value to them, a high value, and therefore you can write off the value of those items over the 5-year schedule. Some things that would fit into the 15-year land improvement categories would be, anything outside the building. So landscaping, that all has value to it. Pavement, parking lot, you have a sidewalk or curbing. All of that has value, and the pavement or the asphalt have different values, and that value will be depreciated on a 15-year schedule. Also included in that would be like a retaining wall or any type of fencing or signage. You name it, think about anything that's outside of the building. So that fits into land improvements as opposed to land. As we mentioned before, land itself does not depreciate. So that's basically just like the dirt, right? Typically, that's going to be somewhere between, 10 and 20% of the value of the purchase price. Can't deduct the dirt, but the land improvements you can. So that's really what's strange, right? And I'll give you a great example of that, right? You have a huge landscaping. All the grass and the trees and everything that you put in there actually have value. You can deduct all that stuff. The dirt itself, you have to allocate a certain amount from the purchase price to land, which does not depreciate. So you can't write that off. But anything else, virtually you can. And a great example of that is like a golf course, because golf courses are probably one of the best tax benefits of any type of property from cost segregation standpoint, because it's usually 70 to 80%. What's called land improvements. So instead of, on a 39-year schedule, 70-80% of that is landscaping. You think about it, the golf course, it gets replacing the grass and the dunes and all that kind of stuff over a faster period. So that's a huge tax benefit.
Wow. Now, it seems like it would be very difficult to ascribe a cost to some of these things that you mentioned. I mean, let's say you buy an apartment, and it's got some 100 units, and they all have pretty much the same kitchen cabinets, for example. But they were built, they were put in maybe, 10 years ago.
Right.
How do you assess a value to those kitchen cabinets? That seems like it'd be a really, it'd be a difficult job.
Exactly. And that's exactly the point. It is a very difficult job, which is why the IRS requires an engineer. And this is really the main component of cost segregation, that you actually need an engineer, someone who's trained not only in engineering, construction engineering, but also in the tax code, to come to the property and really take a full survey, a full tour, pictures, measurements, the whole nine yards of everything in the building. And so, you have companies like ours, Madison Specs, that, and there are a handful of other companies that are as big as ours nationally that will come to the property. We have engineers in-house that do this, you know, full time, doing this for decades. So they'll come to the property and are well versed in what the IRS describes as fitting into these different categories, and then create a report on, you know, based on those calculations. What's the square footage of the carpeting? What's the square footage of the cabinets? And what's the value of them? And so we have both industry standard values for every type of asset that's out there, so hundreds of types of assets that can possibly be in a building. And we have, you know, local kind of standards. So if, you know, you're a certain market, or you know, it was a newly constructed building, you can see what the invoices were, what actual was spent on those things, and can create some sort of calculation based on how long it's actually been in the building to a certain premium to, you know, what the value of the purchase was. So without getting too confusing, it is extremely difficult, which is why the IRS kind of makes you jump through all these hoops of creating this conservation study and having experts come and do this, and all the guidelines that they've provided, you know, so that, you know, you can't just figure that out on your own.
Yeah, it seems like you definitely have to be. And I would imagine, does the IRS have some pretty stringent guidelines for your engineers when they go in and make these assessments?
Yes, extremely stringent engineer guidelines. And if anyone wants to check that out, there's something called the Cost Segregation Audit Techniques Guide. And so this is created by the IRS, put out, you know, on their website, and anyone wants to check out what that entails, you know, be my guest, especially if you have insomnia. It's a great
I was going to say, that's a light reading, you know, late at
right.
night, having trouble sleeping, have that puppy on that nightstand there.
Exactly. Like one of my colleagues, we were once giving a seminar, and someone asked, you know, is there like some sort of, you know, a cheat sheet or some sort of, you know, list where you can give us and like, will tell us, you know, how to do this. And he's like, sure. Yeah. It's, you know, it's about 480 pages. Right? Like, you can go ahead and check it out.
Have fun. That's great. Yeah. Well, you know, one of the most common, you know, strategies right now, especially investing in multifamily properties, is what we call the value add approach to apartment purchasing and so forth. So in that, you know, you buy an existing property and then you go in and you do improvements. Now, it could be exterior improvements. It could be interior. Generally, there's an upgrade in the apartments involved.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you own a property, but you've got maybe a 2-year plan to upgrade all the units, and you're going to, you know, let's say you put all stainless steel appliances and new counters and all that stuff. Let's say you purchased this property and you immediately, you know, started with what the existing property had in terms of setting up your cost segregation. As you upgrade, now, would you revise those numbers as you're doing an upgrade on a value add type of property?
Yes. In fact, and that's an excellent question, because you can really double dip in the tax benefits. So like I mentioned before, what's called the basis, which is the tax value that's assigned to the amount that you can depreciate. So that basis starts when you place the property in service. That means when you close on the property, you buy a property, okay, your $1 million property, let's say you bought, you allocated, you know, 10% for land. So $900,000, that's your basis. That's how much you can write off. When you go and do capital improvements and you do this value add like you're describing, all the money that's spent on the value add is now added to the basis, meaning that now is depreciated as well. Okay, you spend money to improve the property, that money spent is now added to your basis, and now you can write that off as depreciation as well. Now, if you don't do, well, I'd rather put it in the positive, if you can do a cost segregation supplemental study, and I say supplemental because it's a fraction of the cost, once you've already done the entire property and the acquisition, you can do a supplemental cost segregation study on the improvements. Okay, so let's say you go ahead in this $1 million property, you go and you put in, you know, $200,000 of capital improvements, you pull out all the cabinets, you put in, you know, a new, you know, parking lot, what have you, all that money that's spent can now be analyzed by the engineers, the conservation engineers, and applied to the different categories that can be depreciated at a faster life, create that report, and then what we do is produce this updated depreciation schedule that you can now basically double dip. So you're taking the, you know, the concentration on the purchase on that value, and then anything else that you spend and you improve that, you can, you know, on the next year's taxes, take the tax write off on that as well.
Wow. Wow. That seems like a real strong benefit. Well, are there ever sort of mistakes that people do that, let's say they want to do cost segregation and maybe they go about it all wrong, they get in trouble by the IRS? I mean, are there situations that you've heard of where this happens?
Only when you're not doing it properly, meaning like, you know, if you're using a qualified firm that's, you know, has the experience doing this and you're doing everything according to the law, that's what the IRS wants to see. So doing a cost segregation study, and even if it's creating these huge tax deductions to the point where, you know, the majority of people that are doing this are not paying income tax. You know, people who are, you know, very savvy real estate investors are using these kind of strategies so that they're paying, you know, little to no income tax. That does not raise a red light or a red flag in any way to the IRS. So doing that is totally fine. However, if a person were ever to get audited, and the IRS is going to come and check out where you came up with those extra depreciation deductions, if you don't have a proper cost segregation study, which will, you know, go through all the details, you know, it's a whole process of a numbering system and showing your work, all the calculations and bringing all the proofs from the tax code to where you, you know, got these definitions and numbers, et cetera, from, so you're in big trouble. So that's the only place where you're going to see where there's going to be a problem, or if, you know, it's just someone not qualified doing it and maybe allocating much larger amounts to things they shouldn't be.
Right. Now, is there a you talked about single family home even in there. Now, can someone do this with single family homes?
You could, theoretically, and I say theoretically because it's the benefit of cost segregation is a percentage of depreciation that you can front load. Okay, right. We're going to accelerate a certain portion of depreciation on property. So it only really makes sense when there's a certain dollar value or a certain tax benefit that's created through the study. So my rule of thumb, general rule of thumb is, and you could see this just by looking at the numbers sometimes and seeing what a cost segregation study will produce, but my rule of thumb is any property purchased for over $1 million is a no-brainer. There's like, you know, it's like 10, 20 times, 30 times the amount spent on the study itself is what your tax benefit's going to be. You know, when you're looking at a property under $500,000, it's not a lot of benefit there. So, you know, it really doesn't make a lot of sense. So I'll take an example. Let's say you have 20%, and this is pretty typical for, you know, multifamily properties, 20% that we can reallocate to a faster life. So on a $1 million property, you're talking about $200,000 of tax benefits over the first 5 years. That's an extra $40,000 every single year. On a $100,000, okay, property, single family, 20% of $100,000 is only $20,000 that I'm going to be front loading, you know, over 5 years, an extra $4,000 of tax benefit, of tax deductions. So if I'm going to have to pay a few thousand dollars to get a study done, which is usually what the cost is to get one of these things done, you know, you can see pretty clearly that it doesn't really, it's not financially sound when you're looking at such a smaller property.
Now, if somebody wants to do a cost segregation, do they have to go to a sort of certified company or a company that the IRS, sanctions? How do you know who to go to?
Yeah, there is no real official certification, but there is a, you know, the experience is really, you know, what it's all about. So obviously they have to have, engineers and accountants on staff, you know, doing this. A lot of the large accounting firms, so you talk about the big four or the, you know, top 10 accounting firms, have engineers on staff in-house, and they do this, they do cost segregation in-house. So, you know, if you're using, you know, Deloitte or Ernst & Young, et cetera, they're doing cost segregation in-house for you. Otherwise, you have to go, most accountants, you know, don't do this, even though it's an accounting thing, right? It's not something that they can do because it requires the engineering component. So yeah, again, I would look to see what the experience level is, what their track record is. For example, we've done over 16,000 conservation studies, you know, in every asset class, you know, in over, you know, in all 50 states. So we're, you know, one of the bigger ones out there. You want to just see that you have a track record in standing up against, you know, towards the IRS if there have ever been challenges or anything like that. So these are things you want to kind of check out.
And you mentioned various asset classes. So, I mean, can it be a warehouse, a self-storage, mobile home park? I mean, anything that would be classified commercial, you know, big box, triple net type properties?
Absolutely. Any type of property whatsoever. So, yeah, you name it. All the things that you mentioned, you know, even warehouses, which don't have a lot of personal property in, there's still some stuff there. And some things that a lot of people don't think about, like you mentioned, triple net properties are great. But even things that are a business property, right? Obviously, an investment property makes sense, but a business property can also be can have a conservation done on it. So people don't necessarily think of themselves as real estate investors, but nevertheless, they'll own a property. So you have like a doctor who happens to own his building, and you know that his office is in, and he may rent out some other units, or he may take up the entire facility. That building can have a conservation study done on it as well. You know, a factory or a warehouse or you name it, you know, something like that, where you may have a company and you just happen to own the building where your warehouse or where, you know, your distribution or whatever is in there. Guess what? That building also has the potential to get a conservation study.
So if it were a doctor, for example, and their medical equipment, you know, MRIs mm-hmm. and things like that, I mean, those that equipment could also be part of that cost segregation?
Yes. Huge benefits on those kind of things.
Oh, yeah. I could see amazing savings there. Wow. Wow. This is a really fascinating. Is there a way that people can find out more specific? Oh, actually, before I do that, I actually wanted to find out if there was maybe a case study. You could give me an example of maybe someone that you worked with or a company, I mean, or a property where you just saw this amazing savings coming about. Is there something you could use as sort of an example?
Sure, absolutely. But before I even do that, I want to mention one other thing that is extremely relevant to this, which really makes a total game changer of conservation, which a new law that passed in the recent tax reform in 2018 was something called 100% bonus depreciation. So 100% bonus depreciation means that instead of just doing a regular conservation where we're going to be front-loading depreciation deductions, and like I mentioned, you know, 20-30% of the value of the property to the first 5 and 15 years, 100% bonus depreciation actually allows you to take the entire amount in year number one. Okay? So this is something that's literally a game changer. You can literally take, you know, on $1 million property, you can be taking $200,000-$300,000 in the first year as a tax write-off.
Wow, that is amazing. Gosh, that's something that's new or something that has always been there?
No, it's a new law. There used to be something similar to it that was only for new construction, that you would have a 50% write-off of things that were placed in service for the first time as a new construction. But in the tax reform, they moved it from 50 to 100%, and they changed it from not just new construction to any property that you buy. So it's literally, I mean, I've seen people literally pay zero taxes based on it, and like use this to pay no income tax whatsoever. And it's just incredible.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'll take, you know, just that opportunity to take, you know, that kind of segue into answering your question about a case study. A perfect example. I have a guy who happens, he's out in California, in Southern California, and he's the number one residential broker in his county. Okay. So big shot real estate broker. Okay. He had no idea about conservation, and he started buying rental properties, investment properties as well, because, you know, he's making a lot of money in commissions, and decided to put some of that to work to make some, you know, passive income. So he calls me up and he had no idea about this. He had recently bought a $4.5 million apartment complex. Okay. So this is somewhere up in Ventura County, I think, is, you know, about, I'd say 26 units, some of a small property, right? In California, right? The property values are pretty high. So, you know, over $200,000 a door or something like that, $180 a door. he bought this and we, you know, did a conservation study on it. We ended up finding over 20% of the property going into that 5-year category and another about 10% going into the 15-year category, the land improvements. Okay. This allowed him to take, now I just back up even before I tell you what this did, just to give you a background. He had made over $1 million in real estate commissions in the previous year. And he said he had paid over $350,000 in income tax that year, right? So I know there's some people out there. Yeah, there's some people out there that have the kind of this attitude like, hey, if you're paying a lot of taxes, right, that means you made a lot of money, right? I mean, yes and no, because yes, that's true. That's great. But real estate is one of those areas, one of those professions that in the tax code, there's so many strategies and benefits that allow you to literally get around paying any income tax. And whether that's because, you know, Congress or real estate investors, right, or the president, or, you know, what I'm saying, you know, we can have an argument about, you know, the, you know, all of that. But regardless of the fact, the rules are there. And so people who are smart use those rules and use those strategies to create wealth and not pay the tax instead of, you know, just biting the bullet and having to pay. So that was his story a year ago. Okay, 2018, paid a $350,000 tax bill, bought this property. 2019, we did the conservation study. We had found him over $1 million of accelerated depreciation. Okay, so $4.5 million building, you know, he put down probably about, about $700,000-$800,000 of the down payment, over $1 million of bonus depreciation. Okay, so that accelerated depreciation, he decided to take it all in year number one. He called me up, literally with tears in his eyes. He had zero income tax liability this year. Okay, he made more money. He made more money. And instead of writing a check for $300,000+, he was writing it, you know, zero check to the IRS. So, and in fact, may have gotten a refund. I don't even know about that. But that's really how the beauty of this thing works.
That's fascinating. Really fascinating. I mean, if somebody has a property, let's say they've owned it already for 10 years, can they start, you know, the cost segregation any time in that ownership, or do you have to do it, you know, right after you buy it? How does that work?
You can do it retroactively. So there are a lot of people that like to do it right away, you know, first thing when you buy a property, and that's when you're going to be able to get, you know, benefit in the first year. But if you didn't know about this, you can actually go back retroactively and catch up the missed depreciation. So the missed accelerated depreciation, you can go back as far as you want, but from a practical purpose, you know, the benefit is really going to be in the first 5 to 6 years, because that's when you can still get that accelerated 5-year property and get a bunch. And that's all going to be accelerated, similar to the bonus depreciation, you know, because all that you missed, you know, over five years, you can now catch up and get that all, you know, this year as a tax deduction. So this is something that can be done without amending any tax returns, which is probably the best part about it, because, you know, no one's going to want to ever amend tax returns unless you really have to. I would never recommend it, because it's just a red flag for the IRS to audit you.
Yeah. Wow.
But this requires you just to fill a form that's an attachment to your tax return, which is called the Form 3115-3115, which is just a change in accounting method. And that's it. You don't need any request to do this. It's just, you know, informing the IRS, I was depreciating properties in a straight line method, you know, doing it in a regular way, and now I'm doing it in the cost segregation way, which in fact is considered the more accurate way of depreciating the property.
Okay, that's great. Well, Yona, this has been just very informative. I wish you didn't have such little time, because I could go on and on here. We're just going to have you back, I'm sure. You know, this is really great stuff. I'm sure there's people listening too that want to find out more. Would you be open for them contacting you? And, you know, you could, you know, assess whether or not it would make sense for them. What's the best way for folks to reach you?
So the best way to reach me is you can find me on LinkedIn, believe it or not. I think it's Bill and I connected there. I'm very active on that platform. It's a great opportunity. You can send me an email as well, yweiss@madisonspecs.com. And, you know, something really important to note, we offer, and most firms do, a free estimate or free analysis of any property. So no obligation, you know, just to look at and see those numbers of what a potential tax savings would be by doing a full conservation study. And so that's free of charge. And that's just something that can give you a snapshot, you know, even before deciding if this is something that, you know, you need or not.
That's great. Well, we'll definitely put a link up there for not only your contact information, but for your company as well. It sounds like a great thing to have that free assessment. Wow. Well, Yona, this has been great. We have a tradition here, actually. We're called the Old Dogs REI Network, and all of our guests get to close us out with their best old hound dog howl. Okay. Not sure if you read that part of the notes, you know.
I didn't think I missed that. That's so, right. Yeah.
Okay. So if you are up for it, Yona, you want to just close us out with your best hound dog howl?
Can I do my Scooby-Doo impression instead?
Oh, that could be 10 times better. Yes.
Oh, that was a joke, but.
Oh, darn. I was looking forward
to it. Frank, you very much.
Hey, that's good. That's good. I love it. Oh, man, that's great. Well, Yona, thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate it. And that's some valuable information. And it's just great getting to know you and the services that you provide.
Thanks, Bill. Looking forward to speaking again.
You bet. And also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing today, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we greatly appreciate it. Everything we talked about here with Yona is in our show notes, okay? So when you're listening to this podcast, there's a little link there that says, you know, this is where you go to get the show notes. Everything we've talked about is be recapped and outlined. And in addition, there'll be the link so that you can find out more information from Yona as well. So all that's at the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the episode with Yona Weiss. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward, and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.